Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to another episode of the Wild Ones podcast, the show where we chat about bike stuff. It's episode 39. This week, Francis is back along with producer Emily. Hello, friends.
39 is crazy.
It's bonkers that we've got that far, isn't it?
Mind blowing.
I thought we were going to do 10 and then pack it in. And now we've nearly quadrupled it. Although you've actually only been here for about 15 of them.
That's true. You're in a very good mood. How are you?
I'm very good. So basically, I have more time now. I have weekends, which I didn't used to have. We used to be so like locked into doing work and everything that I basically didn't get weekends. I now have weekends back, which is an absolute delight and a blessing, and I'm very thankful for them. And it means that I can start doing more things that I enjoy doing. And I've started watching sport again, which is something I haven't done in a long time. The gateway sport back into sport, not drug, was the Six Nations, because I grew up, you know, I'm Welsh, so rugby's part of that. And then I got Discovery Plus and I watched all of the pro cycling available on Discovery Plus on the weekend, and it was sick.
I feel like this is a good time to start watching pro cycling again,
yeah,
considering the things that went down over the last couple of races.
Well, yeah, it was a very entertaining, eventful weekend. And it's nice kind of like getting a gauge for like who people are again. Mm. But what I have learned, and it has been backed up by the commentators, is that basically all pro cyclists now look the same. They either have a beard or they don't have a beard.
Who are the two teams where they're both in blue kit? It's Quickstep and someone else. So they're both in blue kit with white bits on. And there was a photo posted online of the two riders like together. And it's... If you're on a helicopter image, you wouldn't know.
Well, there was the race. There was a race in Belgium where Zeb from Northeast was racing, and the weather was so hideous the entire race. Pretty much everyone was wearing like rain jackets and warmers.
And that's just normal weather for here. So Zeb must have done really well.
Yeah, you would have
thought
so. He
was in the breakaway, right?
Because of that as well, you can't even see numbers. So even if you did have a list of who the numbers were, you still wouldn't work it out. But I guess most significantly, it was Strada Bianca. Which was mega good. The women's race was absolutely sick. There was so much attacking. Honestly, it was one of those races where you're like, I don't know who's going to win. There was this constant tussle in the last, well, it was really the last 10K, which is in stark contrast to the men's Strada Bianca, where everyone knew exactly what was going to happen from 80K to go.
Pogacar just said, I'm going to attack on this climb, and then... did, but yeah. Still no one could do anything, and then he rode on his own.
I think he's trying to set an expectation that he's not worth going after.
Did you upset people when you posted your thing on Instagram that said Aero is dead? And it was a picture of Pogacar riding in his upright position.
Yeah, some people were very triggered by it.
Were,
yes.
They? Yeah. Yeah. Mission accomplished. I messaged Aero coach saying, with that screenshot,
yeah,
just saying, why is Pogacar's position so shit? Just to poke the bear.
And what
and Xavier replied, I think it was Xavier replying, he Do you want to know the exact reply?
Well, just the loose idea would be sufficient.
Can't remember. Good for a CX position. When CRR is as important as CDA on those surfaces, you can afford to give up a bit of CDA. CIR being rolling resistance.
I actually think there's a change in, and it's why I posted on my story. I think cycling, even at the pro level, is transitioning to, or a better understanding that comfort is actually really, really valuable. And you can push lots of watts, or perhaps push more watts for longer if you are slightly less aero and prioritize things like hip angle and stuff like that.
You never know. You might find that his position is outrageously fast just because of the shape of his body.
Mm-hmm. There is that as well.
Despite looking upright. Aerodynamics are a funny thing. But especially in that race, the surface is so much more gravelly than people realize. You know, there's too many other factors. That screenshot might have just been one specific point in the race where he was more upright as well. So.
he obviously has a tucked in position when he needs
it. He does. And he's also in a skin suit, aero socks, aero helmet, everything. Aero wheels.
Semi-aero frame.
Was he on? Colnago?
Yeah. It's at least, you know, it's like fully integrated and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. I tried to do a bit of digging online to see what sort of tires pros are riding for these events. The only thing I managed to find was Ineos were riding 30 mil GP 5000s, that is what they're called, isn't it? Yeah. At circa 75 PSI. So 30 mil tires, 75 PSI, road tires. And it's mad to think that they are riding tires like that on an event like that. I get it, because obviously their priority is pace and speed and rolling resistance, and they are also doing road sections. But I can't imagine going up some of those climbs on road tires in a peloton as well. People literally sitting on your wheel with that lack of grip, but it works.
It's the gravel. If you were to put gravel in a level system, it's probably one level underneath Unbound. If people have raced and looked at pictures of it Unbound, like, it's surprisingly gravelly. I rode it with Daniela Benati, who previously, he lives in that area of Italy, and he's an ex-pro. And the first white road that we hit together, I was running tubes and hit a rock straight away and punctured. And then we fixed it and it was fine for the rest of the ride. But it's not like you can just hit it full gas and be fine. They're not your normal, it's not road with a little sprinkling of gravel. Some of the sections are like really gravelly.
I think it's a great example of why normal people shouldn't follow what the pros do, because they're riding that tire setup on that kind of event is a pro thing only, because they want the absolute maximum performance, whereas a normal person is going to have a much more enjoyable time on a larger volume tire, probably with a little bit of tread.
They're just hoping. A lot of it is luck, and they're prepared to sacrifice that. You know, there's a chance that they might get puncture any time, but the aero benefits and the speed benefits obviously worth it.
This might be the most perfect segue in Wild Ones podcast history. Unintentional. On the topic of Strada Bianca, their official Instagram page shared a photo of the race showing yet another Lotto Destiny rider having issues with their front wheel and tire. So you might remember last week we talked about how Lotto Destiny rider Thomas de Gendt's hookless tire blew off the rim in the UAE Tour. Well, this latest picture from the Strada Bianca shows one of his teammates appearing to have the same problem. Again, in the photo, we see the tyre and foam insert has detached from the wheel and the rider was forced to carry his bike. Following de Gendt's crash, the UCI has said they'll review hookless rims and tubeless tyres as a matter of urgency. Meanwhile, the team's tyre sponsor Vittoria has issued a statement saying that hookless system wasn't to blame for this crash. They said it's crucial to clarify that the rim's failure resulted from an impact from an object, in this case a rock, and is unrelated to the hookless rim design. The force was so severe that it tore apart the tire insert. So that's very much in line with how you're describing the gravel of that event, that it's actually quite aggressive and therefore it's quite likely that you did hit something quite severe.
I think that statement refers to the UAE Tour, which was a road. to.
Oh, right. I see.
Which is probably the opposite. Probably the smoothest road in the history of
with zero
the
rocks world. On.
With zero rocks on.
Well, they're saying he managed to find a rock, so who knows?
They also insisted it's not a compatibility issue amongst the components. Meanwhile, wheel sponsor Zip has said they're working with a team to understand what happened.
Hello, Emily from the future here. Since we recorded this, Zip has put out another statement agreeing that a rock caused the first incident at the UAE Tour. They say the level of impact caused severe damage to the tyre and rim and would have done so regardless of rim design. They haven't yet commented on the second incident at the Strada Bianca, so for now we're going to have to assume that one was witchcraft, but they say their rims comply with regulations and are proven safe. And now back to Jimmy.
There's definitely a lot of comments I've noticed on videos. I know we always talk about not reading the comments, but I like to have a little skim when we're talking about a topic that's going to have opinion, because it's always good to know what our audience is
I'm
thinking.
Glad you look at them, because I honestly don't look at them, and then I get a message from you, you screenshot them to me. So I end up seeing them as a byproduct.
I monitor them.
I guess what I look for is like themes, and yeah. There is definitely a theme that people are nervous / scared / unhappy with hookless.
I'm not unhappy with it because I don't have any wheels which are hookless, but I would be annoyed if I ended up with a bike that had hookless wheels on it, because I think I'd just be, it'd be in my head when I'm going down a descent. Like I don't want it. Sorry. I'm glad the Van Rysel that we got lent recently for a video project didn't have hookless wheels. I was like, oh, thank God for that.
I've got a set of Zip
303s.
303s. Yeah. So like the cheap Zips, which are still like
expensive. Yeah.
900 quid mm-hmm. or something or other. And if you remember when we first talked about hookless on the podcast, that was the point where I learned that
you didn't even know.
Yeah. I've not had any issues with them, but I rode them in Spain when we went bikepacking.
Mm. I've got, it's a lie. I do have one set of hookless wheels, and they're gravel specific wheels, some of the parkours, but they're only ever ridden at 30 PSI. So it doesn't matter. It's the road hookless, which is like, is that going to go wrong? And I don't want that in my head.
So I think an interesting thing is that hookless wheels are definitely not new to the Pro Peloton. So we asked Nick, Pro Bike Mechanic Nick. So he says that those exact Zip wheels have been in the Pro Peloton for about 4 years. The tires have been around for about a year. And he thinks the inserts are new. And his speculation is... The unique thing about that setup, or perhaps the unique thing about that setup, is the foam inserts, and they might actually be the cause of these issues, because they were definitely used on both of the explosions, whatever you want to call them.
What would it do? Would it compress and like push the tire out of the channel?
If these are the tires and foam inserts that I think they are, I actually spoke to someone at Vittoria at one of the trade shows I've been to recently, specifically about these inserts.
So the inserts of Vittoria as well?
I believe so, yes. It would make sense that they are. Mm. I'm pretty certain they are. And it was that the mountain bike ones are designed to protect the rim, whereas the road ones are designed to make the tire still rideable if you do get a puncture.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, they're quite big and boofy. So perhaps the big and boofy is what gives it a push when there's air moving around.
Who knows? It's weird for it to happen twice.
Yeah.
In consecutive events, basically. Maybe it's just bad luck. It's definitely bad PR, isn't it, really, for the brand?
Same team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad for Vittoria.
Bad for hookless.
Bad for hookless.
But the thing is, it might even be user error. So it might be the mechanics are setting it up wrong or not following the recommended something rather. Obviously, we don't know at this point.
If people's tires are blowing off anyway without the inserts in the real world, which has happened. People have been posting it on YouTube all over the place because of weird situation. Either it's like air pressure or temperature, or they've just put slightly too much PSI in and the instructions on the side of the tire are not clear enough.
Yeah,
it's happening.
The user error thing is it's an odd argument, isn't it? Because even if it is user error, like why do you have to be an expert to be able to pump your tire up?
I think that's the crux of the issue with consumer products.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to be an expert to be able to be safe on your tire. But who knows? It's all speculation at this point. The UCI are looking into it, so...
What happens if they ban hookless? Well, presumably all of the...
Envy and Zip have to remake all of their wheels. Yeah. And Dov was telling me it's not even that much cheaper to create a hookless wheel. It's only because they're making so many, like a company the size of Parkour, owned by our friend Dov, because it's not multiplied so many times, the cost of just keeping everything hooked is not as bad. Whereas for Envy and Zip, because they're making thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of wheel sets.
I can't imagine Envy are, issue. Envy are probably not huge.
Well, they're
Zip definitely
much bigger
are.
Than Parkour.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, so yeah. Of
it's
course.
Obviously worth it for them. Yeah. I think that's the issue.
One of Nick's conspiracy theories was also that hookless slander is being started by wheel companies that don't want to have to remake their molds and convert to hookless. So they purposely don't want hookless to catch on because they want to keep doing what they're doing. Which
surely it works both ways, though, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it does exactly. I don't know.
I think there's a lot. Some of the wheel brands who are still making hooked wheels are being sought after by people who don't want to ride hookless. So it's kind of a good thing there.
That is what I have found from skimming over the comments on our previous video. Is there is definitely a decent proportion of people which are actively against hookless and therefore are actively looking for products that are not that. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting one for us to keep tabs on going forward and see what happens. Because yeah, if they ban them, I guess that still doesn't stop Zip from selling their wheels. If you know they don't have to like write off all of their stock and move to something else, but the pros need to be on something else.
Yeah, but it's a bit of a trickle down, isn't it? If they're banned for being dangerous, then you probably want to pivot quite quickly.
Yeah, but they also banned disc brakes at a point for being dangerous.
Yeah, true, true, true.
Next up. What the hell is going on at Visma Lisa Bike and their new TT helmet? So we actually literally just finished recording the podcast, opened Instagram and saw an image, which we're about to talk about, and we instantly sat back down to have this conversation.
So about 10 people sent this to me.
It's a new Giro helmet that was debuted by the team at the Tirreno Adriatico, which is a road race in Italy. And how would you describe it for audio listeners?
Giant banana.
Giant banana crossed with a spaceship?
Darth helmet, or the guys in Star Wars who are like the rebel guards who go choop, 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 and they speed gun the ships as they come into the planet.
It's like the lid of a pen made massive and stuffed on someone's head. Not only is the shape very odd, but it's been multiplied by about 5 in terms of size. It's just huge, isn't it?
It's really pointy and up at the front. It's not head shaped.
It's so wide. So it's created aerodynamically. They have made a fairing, which is supposed to be like, make the air smoother going straight over your body, isn't it? It's so big. It's made you into a torpedo.
I'm amazed this has been allowed. I feel like it's going to be banned very quickly.
This is why the UCI exists. Like so many of their rules are aesthetic and they just ban weird stuff for looking weird. And surely they're going to get rid of that.
Well, where do you stop? Because that's so close to shoulders and it's so big that you could almost design a helmet that is a whole pod of a person.
And it'll be real fast.
Yeah.
Well, that is like, there are those bikes, aren't they? Where they're based like shells.
Fully fed. And they're significantly faster than all the land speed records and stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll see how long it's like. We record, this is breaking news for us because we're recording on a Monday. Let's see if by Thursday it's still UCI legal.
To be fair, that looks better. I would rather wear that than one of those weird black neck things that the riders have been wearing.
What?
They've been wearing, the TT helmets have had some like built-in thing. The specialized ones have it. And it's like a black neck sock, which I don't know if they're wearing a balaclava underneath. I don't know what's going on.
I've not seen this.
It looks horrible. It looks horrible.
It must be terrible if you think this is better.
Oh, that is way better.
So there have been some funny comments on Instagram. We grabbed a couple of them. When you get AI to design a TT helmet, I don't care how aero it is, we don't want it.
It does look like an AI picture.
It does look like an AI.
Sorry, Giro.
Are these things made as marketing ploys?
What? So we've talked about it.
Yeah.
We've given them more.
Because it works.
I don't think they are. I think it is going to be really fast.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really fast helmet. The problem with aero is aero means... it's just like really odd, weird looking stuff, almost alien stuff. But that's what makes things faster.
Xenomorph.
This presumably isn't going to be illegal in triathlon.
Interesting. It's so new, we don't even know the name of it yet. Maybe we will by Thursday.
Is it not on the website? I thought they weren't allowed to use products that weren't publicly available.
Good point. Giro TT helmet.
That is true, isn't
they
it?
They break those rules every 5 seconds. They no seem one cares, to, don't do they? Yeah. It probably is listed on a website deep in the somewhere. Internet somewhere.
Is it showing up?
No, all I can see, the team Visma Lisa bike put on their Instagram, recon time, it says. Do you think it's called the recon? R-E-C-O-N, recon time.
Nah, I think it's just,
no.
It's recon time.
Yeah, maybe. Excited to use our brand new innovative Giro helmets for the first time, and then a rocket emoji.
I reckon it is called that.
The recon, Giro recon. Shall I wait?
It might be Giro recon.
Giro recon.
I think it is going to be that.
Helmet, I don't know.
It's going to be that.
I can't see. It's not coming up. They haven't got their SEO right, if that's what it is.
Why is it that the cycling industry has an obsession with phallic apparel?
Silka did one, didn't they?
Well, yeah.
Do you remember their top out front mat? I don't think they make it anymore.
Well, I think they've got a different one now that looks less phallic.
Is it phallic or is that just aerodynamics? Just you have to have...
phallic objects. Yeah. Also in the news, Fraser Group, who are the owners of Sports Direct and Evans, have reportedly acquired Wiggle CRC for less than £10 million. There have been rumours of a takeover by Fraser Group for a while now, and we've talked about it in previous episodes. It looks like the deal is now going ahead, according to The Times. They've apparently agreed to buy Wiggle CRC's brand and intellectual property, meaning that they'll have the rights to in-house brands including Vitus Bikes, DHB, Nuke Proof and Lifeline. Unfortunately, all of Wiggle's 447 staff are set to lose their jobs. It's unclear what this acquisition will mean for the Wiggle brand going forward. So we know that Fraser Group owns Sports Direct and Evans. Are they going to merge all of that together into one super group company? I think the answer is yes, because they're going to look at brands like Decathlon, who are legitimately one of the biggest sports retailers in the world, and they're going to go, well... I don't know if either of you have walked into a Decathlon recently. Oh, actually, I know you have because we walked into one in Canary Wharf when we were in London. Not Canary Wharf, Canada Water. And it's just insane. The amount of options and stuff they have. Like, I legitimately walk into a Decathlon and I just want to, like, I want to buy, like, fishing rods, even though I don't like fishing. And I want to get, like, an equestrian helmet, even though I'm... not into riding horses. It's just like an experience. And I think that is exactly what the Fraser Group are going to do here. They've got the brands now to be able to make a super shop. And I think it's going to happen.
So I actually went into a Sports Direct at the weekend because I needed a pair of specific netball shoes. So I've started playing netball. And on my second training session, I saw a lass basically jump in the air and then fall over and break her ankle. It went off sideways and it made me realize that my shoes were not sufficient enough for what I was doing. So I wanted a specific pair of netball shoes that were super grippy and I wasn't going to slide around. And the only place I could find those was Sports Direct, who've just opened a brand new shop in the Metro Centre, which is a local shopping outlet. It used to be the biggest in Europe. It used to have a roller coaster inside it.
Biggest in Europe? Yep.
So the Sports Direct I went into was very much set up like a Decathlon. It was huge. It had lots of different sports sections within it. It had a whole bit for football with like football boots and balls. And then it had a whole running trainer section. Then it had a specialist trainer section. And then it had sporting equipment. So I can buy hockey sticks and badminton rackets. And I didn't actually see bikes. I didn't look for bikes because that wasn't what I was there for. But I didn't see any bikes. I'm not sure... because they've owned Evans for a while now, I haven't seen any.
So it's not like a discount store. They just always have a sale on.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know, there are some, you go into some Sports Direct and it looks like a...
looks like one of those closing down sale shops.
Yeah, it does. It's like almost like...
which always is closing down.
Yeah. Whereas this one was not like that at all. So I don't know whether it's just the effect of it being new or, but it was set up very much like department store for sporting goods kind of vibe. Decathlon vibe, definitely. But there was no indication that there was bikes included in that. Although there was a gaming section in the middle of it.
Oh, well, okay. So Sports Direct has changed a lot.
And there was a USC, which USC was, it was always designer brands, I think, wasn't it? It's like French Connection and that kind of thing. So it had non-sporting clothes section as well with it. Because they own so much stuff now, they can do that kind of department store vibe thing. But I don't know, at the moment, I didn't see any indication that Evans was part of that. But perhaps the Evans and Wiggle will join together. People were speculating that they might start selling Lonsdale bikes and that kind of thing. Who knows?
Yeah, I think Fraser Group have not a fantastic reputation for how they conduct business and how they look after their staff. but I want to discount that and think of it as an industry thing. I think it is a good thing for cycling as a whole, because I want more competition in the space from non-traditional biking, cycling brands that are challenging the traditional norms. And that's one of the reasons we like Decathlon, is that they are absolutely doing that. And I want more brands like Decathlon. I don't want it to be just Decathlon. I want there to be other ones that are forcing change, forcing better value, approaching things differently, and actually making sure that the people that are actually buying bikes, which is not, like, most people are not buying £6,000 bikes. They're buying £500 bikes, £1,000 bikes. And that's, this increases the chances that there's going to be better value, better competition in that space where most people are buying bikes. So for that, I'm excited.
Yeah, totally. It's sad for the people losing their jobs. I saw on cycling LinkedIn, a lot of people have started publicly advertising their jobs. I saw Garmin's head of whatever it is, Big Jack, was advertising to sort of wiggle staff who are outgoing, kind of saying, these are the jobs we have posted. So hopefully that will be able to be mopped up.
Although, to be honest, if they got jobs outside of cycling, they'd probably make more money. Now on to our big question, or should I say questions, because this week we're going to have some fun and play a game of Would You Rather. So we have some cycling related and some not. And the first one is, would you rather have rain for an hour of every ride or four punctures on every ride?
Oh.
Four.
This isn't. Four. This is not even a hard one for me. Rain, easily.
You'd rather the rain?
Yeah. Because I can just wear waterproof trousers, waterproof jacket, get to the other side.
Because then you've got to clean your bike, which takes as long as fixing four punctures. I'm pretty fast at fixing a puncture.
Just don't clean your bike.
Does it mean that you will never have rain?
I was about to ask the same thing. I mean, I created these questions. I guess the answer would be yes.
100% four punctures. I have to fix another puncture in the sun.
So I guess what it is rain for every hour, but never a puncture, or four punctures, but never rain.
Four punctures.
Yeah, four punctures.
That's what I get anyway on rides.
Yeah.
Fine. Just the idea of having to stop every time would just do me in.
I love stopping more than riding.
So look at like a commute in, half hour commute, four punctures.
What am I going to be late for? I'm the boss. It's fine.
Yeah, but then you're going to have to rely on fossil fuels to get yourself into work.
No, I'll accept the punctures. Four stops on the way, as long as they don't happen along some
four stops on the way back.
Some of the bits I have to ride through. Specific areas I'll make sure I don't
have
stop
a
in.
Backpack full of inner tubes at all times.
Well, do I get to have am I allowed to ride inserts?
Just ride. Do you want to?
Not really. Do you know, when I was sponsored by Villia, someone can correct me in the comments. This is a question to the audience, because I want to know, and I haven't been able to Google the right spelling of the word. The Italians, when I was sponsored by Villia, called inserts mooses or mouses. Moose.
Okay.
And
what's the question?
I want to know what that is. Why is it called that?
Have you tried Googling English word insert translate to Italian?
You're a genius. I'll do it after this podcast.
Right. Would you rather never be able to wear bib shorts again, or have to wear bib shorts at all times?
Never again.
Never again. Yes, bib shorts have value, but...
I just wear the special pants that I bought you as a present on AliExpress.
No, you're not allowed to. That's the thing. You're not
They're not bib shorts.
No, but that counts.
It's that's
you're not allowed
cheating.
Padded bum.
And what? A full carbon saddle with no padding.
So I'd have to have padded shorts all the time. What about in the shower?
All the time. Oh God, that would be horrible.
All the time. Imagine how like they would start. It's like they'd smell like your watch.
Yeah, never again. Next.
Yeah, never again. Would you rather wake up tomorrow and you've won £500,000, or wake up tomorrow and you've won the Tour de France?
What's the prize money for the Tour de France?
500,000 euros for men.
Well, I am a man, so I would just win the Tour de France.
I knew it. I knew he would find a way of saying I'd win the Tour de France.
Well, 500,000 euros is not that far off, £500,000. And then you could just make money doing the...
The circuit.
Yeah, the circuit. I'd release an aftershave.
Get a sweet deal with Red Bull or something.
Yeah.
So I would definitely take the £500,000 and not win the Tour de France, because firstly, if you...
Ooh, would you value the anonymity?
Yeah.
Well, I do.
That's a good point.
But also, the winner of the Tour de France doesn't just get the prize money. It goes to the team and then you get a share.
Not if you just... Don't let them.
I don't think it will even be go to you. It will go to the team. You're never going to, you would never get sight of it. But I also, like, you know, realistically, the, are you assuming that you actually don't have to do any of the work to actually win the Tour de France?
Well, up to that point, you walk up tomorrow and you've won it.
Right, okay. That's kind of cool, but.
What are you choosing, Jimmy?
500 grand. I don't know if you've heard this before, but I'm a finance guy, so I can make that 500 grand work for me.
If I woke up tomorrow having won the Tour de France fam, I'd have earned about £10. So I would choose the 500,000.
Would you rather have Pogacar's cycling ability or Stephen Hawkins's IQ?
Hawkins. You imagine you'd be able to read.
I would easily take Stephen Hawkins's IQ.
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
Everything's already been invented, though, hasn't it? What would you use it for?
Unlimited energy. That's where physics is going, isn't it? That's why everyone's so like, it is the ultimate.
Fusioncade.
Well, arc reactor.
We should create a product, Fusioncade. Should be like a an aftershave.
that's my aftershave. I'm going to release
Fusion,
after.
Fusioncade by Cade.
Well, it's just your voice. We'll get someone better to do the voice. We'll get Justin to do it. Yeah.
Fusioncade by Cade.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Would you rather win £1 million on the lottery or go back 10 years with all the knowledge you have now? I would take the £1 million right now. I wouldn't change anything about my past.
No, you're talking about reliving the last 10 years. 100% that.
But if you had that knowledge...
Time is much more valuable than money.
If you had that knowledge, you wouldn't follow the same path. It would be different.
Even better.
I have nothing that I would want to do different.
I would find it incredibly stressed because you'd want things to happen in your life at certain points, like meeting a significant other or opportunity or whatever. You'd have to remember exactly where you were and how those things happened. That would give me intense anxiety.
I've just realized you're essentially, if you took the 10 years one, you're saying goodbye to the version of those people that you knew.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You are.
Okay, that is sad.
But you have the potential to make a lot of opportunities. Mm. Hello.
Cheers, mate. I like that guy.
Sorry for that brief interruption. We were just joined by the postman.
He was on guard because usually he gets attacked by Bella.
Yeah.
Bella's not here.
Bella's not here. I can't remember what I was saying, but the answer is £1 million on the lottery right now.
I've changed my answer to £1 million.
Have you?
I realise it would mean saying goodbye to the people that I love.
Yeah, true.
And they would then be different people.
Yes.
So it's just, that's too confusing. You know what? If I've learned anything from movies, just don't mess with time travel.
Unless you have Stephen Hawking's IQ, then you can navigate it.
That'll be fine, yeah.
That's very good. Good. It's a good message to take away from all film. Would you rather always have to ride without a saddle or with one crank?
Without a saddle. I've seen what it's like to ride with one crank, and it is unpleasant. Whereas without a saddle, I've seen a guy who does that, only rides with no saddle. He did the Tour de France. It's like 400K, 500K ride.
Wild.
Over different days. And we were like, oh, he's doing it with no saddle. That's so joking. What a great challenge. And he's like, no, I always ride without a saddle.
Okay.
He's just some German dude who always rides without a saddle. And because he's trained to hold that, his core is like,
you could definitely, like, you could adapt to riding without a saddle and still enjoy riding bikes. I feel like the adaptation to riding with just one crank arm would just make cycling just so unenjoyable.
Think of the imbalance. Could you switch it? Emily, could you switch it in your rules?
Yes, I guess so. It says one crank. It doesn't say it has to be on the same side.
I don't think that makes it any better.
No.
That doesn't.
Yeah, without a saddle.
Yeah, without a saddle.
Would you rather have every meal that you eat for the rest of your life be too spicy or too sour?
Sour.
Sour. You'd get used to either, presumably.
Well, no, because if you got used to the spice, it would have to become spicier.
Oh.
And if you got used to the sour, it would have to become sourer.
Oh, gosh.
Give me an example of something that's too sour other than...
Toxic waste.
Toxic. Other than that.
Toxic. All of it would just be toxic waste.
But what if you have a savoury, like a pasta?
Toxic waste.
How would it? What would it taste of?
Toxic waste.
What about people who don't know what a toxic waste is?
My tooth is still damaged.
It's
from
a little sweets
sweet.
Or candies for the American viewers, which come in a barrel.
Very popular
it's
with
a canister,
children,
isn't it?
I think I would go with too spicy. Although I hate too spicy, I think that in the grand scheme of things, it isn't going to mess you up, and it might boost your metabolism. Would you rather never lose any fitness and mobility gains you make from now on, or be able to teleport with your bike to anywhere in the world? Easy.
Teleport.
I would do the other.
Fitness gains.
I would much rather be able to enjoy physically moving for the rest of my life without teleporting all over the place than teleporting stuff. And I saw this question, I knew you were going to go with teleport.
Teleport into a bank vault, take the stuff, money or diamonds or gold.
Stuff them in the bike frame.
Teleport out. Pay a personal trainer. You got mobility.
Wow. Have you ever seen the film Jumper with...
Yes, I was thinking of that. They left Samuel L. Jackson just on that cliff face,
yes,
didn't they?
Yes, they did, yeah.
In the hole. He's probably still there.
I think that's an underrated film, by the way. I really like that film, and it has terrible reviews.
Mm-hmm. Hayden Christensen.
Yes.
We found a new reason for a tail fin now as well, so you can teleport in with a bike with a tail fin on it.
Double panniers.
Yeah.
As we know, no one ever suspects the cyclist anyway, so...
Would you rather only eat energy gels for the rest of your life or only eat cheese?
This was your suggestion, Francis.
This is an easy... Cheese, obviously.
Cheese.
That's nearly my diet anyway. It's not far from that anyway. You just add a bit of bread. All I would have to do is not eat the bread that I eat and then I'm there anyway.
Yeah. You could have... So when I came up with this one, I figured you could have any type of the item as well. So the cheese, you could have goat's cheese, you could have... Baby bells, you could have vegan cheese, you can have all sorts of different cheeses.
Fondue drink.
And energy gels, you could have like normal energy gel. You could have those ones that are a bit yogurty. You could have those ones that make you like strip and burn fat. They're probably really bad for your heart. Loads of different types.
So what are you saying?
Cheese.
Okay.
Would you rather ride a month-long bikepacking trip with a squeaky BB that can't be fixed or someone half-wheeling you the whole time? When you say the whole time, do you mean just like all the time, or do you mean on that bikepacking trip?
On that bikepacking trip.
Okay.
Squeaky BB, I do that one every time anyway. So I'll just do that.
It's very annoying, but I think the half-wheeling thing would do me in more. Mostly because I'd be thinking, like, someone's coming down. There's going to be a crash. There's going to be an accident here because I'm going to take a photo. I'm going to swing around all over the road because I'm having a great jolly and there's no cars around, and I'm going to end up taking myself out or someone else out. Whereas a squeaky BB... I can just not pedal.
That situation doesn't sound specific to someone half wheeling you. That just sounds like you're going to crash.
Maybe you're the problem.
Would you rather be the most famous person in the world or everyone in the world forgets who you are?
These are both rubbish.
Oh, wow.
I would like to be forgotten.
Would you?
Yeah.
What if Emily would forget who you are? Bella would. You'd be like, hi, Bella, and she'd run
everyone.
Away.
Everyone.
Well, like everyone.
Everyone.
Oh, the most famous.
Yeah, most famous.
If you literally mean like everyone,
yeah,
then
you could,
yeah,
they won't continue. You could reintroduce yourself, but they will have forgotten you.
Oh yeah, no, I'm definitely not doing that.
Right, who's the most famous person in the world?
Will Smith,
the Queen.
Who is the
Beyonce?
Most famous person in the world?
Taylor that. Swift.
It'll be Trump or like think about other cultures. So
I think it's probably going to be someone like Taylor Swift. Because her reach is just astronomical across like so many communities.
Anyway, regardless, yeah, I guess you would be them. You wouldn't be able to. They're both a curse.
All right. I'm going to take the most famous person in the world because I would use it to do good like Superman.
Yeah, that's a good shout. But at that point, you're so famous, you probably can leverage that for money. Therefore, you can just interact with the people that you want to interact with.
You're so obsessed with money.
You're finance man. You have your 500,000 not win the Tour de France.
Would you rather have the ability to see 10 minutes into the future or 150 years into the future?
150 years into the future.
So
definitely.
10 minutes into the future means that you can make some like mad gains. So this is like Back to the Future kind of stuff. You know, like you know what sporting event, what the results are going to happen. You know when someone's going to score a goal. You could do it to become outrageously successful very, very quickly. You're always going to win a bet. Always.
Well, yeah.
However, something I'm legitimately interested in is like what happens in the future. Like the future future.
What if it was bad though?
Well, I'm expecting it to be.
Okay.
of course it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
From a curiosity standpoint, you'll be able to see 150 years in the future and it's exciting and interesting. But then you can use what you've learned to create or invent something earlier than what it was.
Yes.
Oh, no, we're messing with time travel.
But however, it's unlikely that you would be able to develop a technology that was relevant 150 years into the future. The most likely thing you would get from seeing that into the future is like, oh, well, yep, I was right. We are all ruined. But I think I would it'd be more fascinating. So I would go with 150 years into the future.
I go 10 minutes. I don't want to know. I don't want to know too much.
Well, it doesn't really affect you anyway.
Yeah, but it would make me... I don't know what I would do with that information.
You could also avoid, if you had the 10 minutes one, you could avoid having an accident and dying.
Yeah.
In a lot of situations. Like there might Ooh. Be, you might be hit by a bus.
But can you change you avoid the future?
That. Well, yeah, if you'd seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. That's the same as doing the betting thing. You can change it.
Mm.
Both are really good. I'd do 150 years.
Well, how about you do the 150 years and tell me, I'll do the 10 minutes and tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Time for another round of overrated or underrated. I'm going to read out a list of things and you're going to tell me if they're overrated or underrated. First up, we have custom-made bike frames. This one's from Gabrielle in Belgium who says, I know Jimmy likes a custom frame, but I disagree. I think they're overrated. There might be an advantage of having a custom frame, but this advantage does not last long since our body changes with age. Fair point. Over the last 10 years, I've done several bike fits and the results were very different each time because of the changes in my body. They're also extremely expensive, even though the material is cheap versus carbon, alloy, and titanium. I believe that if a cyclist chooses the correct size, then any bike can be adapted to their body with a stem swap or by adding and removing spacers. And this cost is tiny in proportion of a customized frame. Don't get me wrong, I am a steel lover. However, I would never invest in a custom-made steel bike and I wish more brands sold off-the-shelf steel bikes. P.S. I have a Fairlight that I love. Fairlight offers two different geometries for each size and this is far sufficient, I believe, to accommodate any cyclist.
It is sufficient for cyclists, any cyclist. It depends if your body's going to change, doesn't it? Like... Why has his... I've had multiple bike fits over the last 15 years and my body's stayed exactly the same.
So you are not quite old enough to appreciate body changing.
Potentially, yeah.
I am just about at the point that I do appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I ride much less aggressive bikes than I used to. Mm-hmm. Granted, if I rode as much as I used to ride, then I probably wouldn't need to, but I don't. I think... There are steel custom bike manufacturers out there that are doing bikes that are a price that are not outrageous. But I do agree that a lot of custom steel bikes manufacturing has just gone bonkers. You know, like there's steel bike frames out there that are costing like £3,000-£4,000, which is not a good investment. But there are still bike manufacturers out there that are doing custom bikes for £1,500, £2,000, £2,500, which is obviously still a lot of money, but it's a very custom piece. You can also buy a custom bike that has a geometry that gives you options going forward as well.
Might I point out that a lot of people are prepared to spend £10,000 on the latest S-Works or even more money, and most custom bikes are cheaper than that. If you get Carbon Sato is significantly cheaper than that, even built up with top end group set. And then you look at steel frames. So he's saying just custom made bike frame.
It's not significant. It would be about the same price.
It's not. We calculated it with James the other day. Significantly cheaper to buy a Sato from him than it is a fully custom with SRAM Red than it is to buy latest S-Works, which is £13,000.
It can't be significantly cheaper.
Yeah.
Because that frame on its own is about five
grand. Yeah, but you get handlebars, seat post, all the stuff. Like it works out cheaper.
Okay.
Thousands of pounds cheaper.
Okay, yeah, fine.
Thousands of pounds cheaper.
I think what the best bit for me about custom bikes, the last bike I bought was a steel Howler gravel bike made by my mate Billy. Howler Frameworks, absolutely incredible. And what was the most amazing experience about that is I was able to talk to him about, right, I do not want toe overlap, which as someone which is on the smaller side of stuff, you get toe overlap on everything. So I've got a really, really small bike and zero toe overlap on it. And that was because it was a custom bike. Like if I bought an off-the-shelf gravel bike, I will always have toe overlap. It's just one of the things that I wanted about it. So what you do also get from a custom bike is the option to kind of have an input into how it rides, how it feels, how you want it to be. I do think a lot of custom steel is overrated because there is a lot of people out there that are just doing welding courses and then chucking bikes together and they don't have this expertise, or you know, they're not necessarily experts in custom geometry, etc., etc., etc. I also know Fairlight because one of the guys that we know, Seb the giant, he's like 7 foot tall.
Yep.
He works for Seb, and I've had an awareness of that brand for a long time. Yeah. Sorry?
He works for Fairlight.
He does. What did I say?
He works for Seb.
I guess he does that as well.
I guess what you're not advocating for is everyone needs to get a custom bike.
No,
that's what everyone should aim for.
Yeah.
It's a luxury, not a necessity.
Absolutely, yeah. Fairlight are a really good brand, like he's saying, because they do lots of size options through their runs. And a lot of, they used to do a lot of like pre-order, which takes a lot of pressure on them to have to hold loads and loads of stock, meaning that they can explore more sizing options rather than have to just stock small, medium, large, extra large. They are a very good example of a good value steel bike. I don't actually know what the price point is. I don't think it's astronomical. I think custom steel has got a bit ridiculous.
James is a big fan of Fairlight as well, purely the custom option, sizing options.
There are a lot of custom steel bike makers out there that are doing it for figures that aren't bonkers.
Depends how long you value a bike for as well. I think if I had a bike for 10 years, I might get bored of it and want a new one by then anyway. So having the right size for 10-ish years is a good thing. It might be worth the cost. That's all I'm saying.
I think what I've always done is just changed my bike. So my original Moss bike, which I've had for more than 10 years now, it's had probably three different group sets. It's had two different colorways. You know, like it doesn't have to be the same. And because it's steel, actually, it's really easy to get it. You can just get it shot blast and powder coated if you want to. You can get it, change the color of it.
Oh, visually changing it.
Yeah.
Also, if you have a really good starting point and your body might have changed a little bit over the course of 10 or 15 years, you can still add spaces and adjust seat post height and that kind of thing. Mm. It's probably still very close.
I reckon what Gabriel's doing is the custom steel bike manufacturers he's looking at are doing £3,500 frame sets. And I agree that is probably too much money for a steel bike. Next, we have Shackets. Suggested by Jake, who says he's noticed Jimmy and Francis are serial shacket wearers and says he recently had to explain to an American client what a shacket was.
What's a shacket?
Before this, I had to explain to you what a shacket is. A shacket is a shirt jacket. So it's like a light jacket that looks like a shirt. It's slightly thicker than a shirt, but slightly thinner than
Jimmy's
a jacket.
How I know this is a shacket is that I'm wearing a jumper underneath it.
Yeah.
Which means it must be a shacket.
Well, I haven't got one of them.
You wear your jacket as a shacket.
I wear my jacket as a jacket.
Jimmy's king of the shackets, I would say.
King.
Do you know how this started though? It's because at the start of the year or the end of last year, it was incredibly cold in this studio and we started wearing our actual big coats indoors, and then people commented, "Why are you wearing your big coats indoors?" So we all
I'm still wearing my big coat indoors.
Yeah, it's
just
on
my. I'm wearing it like a nice cozy blanket.
So both of you invested in some different clothing, one of which was shackets, I think.
Shacket.
It's an indoor item.
Oh, wait there. Do we have to rate?
Yes.
This is overrated. Shackets, are they overrated or underrated? Overrated.
I'm definitely overrated. I'm not buying one then.
last one, CBD.
Overrated.
So CBD is like the bit of weed
which isn't THC,
which doesn't get you high, but like levels you out. And it's, you can get it in oils, which you put on your tongue. You can get it in drinks now and lots of other stuff.
It's supposed to make you feel chilled and relieve anxiety, but it makes me anxious.
We had some drinks, some canned ones, and yeah, it made me horribly anxious.
That's not even much. I had like a little vial thing you could
We've had some of that stuff as well.
Yeah. No, not for me.
I absolutely hate it.
Anything weed related, not for me.
Same.
Agreed. Yeah.
Even though I wish, based on other people's reactions to it, I could enjoy the same experience.
I think it's really interesting how, like, the reputation of weed within pop culture, and it's definitely a bigger thing in America, and obviously it's legal in some states in America. I don't think anybody talks about the bad sides, and I would say there are bad sides.
What percentage of people do you think have a bad reaction?
I don't
because
know.
It seems to be everyone in America loads. Seems to be fine. Like, we spent a bit of time there. It's just us.
Well, I don't know, to be honest. I've never even seen weed. What is it?
I'm wholly jealous of anyone who can enjoy it. I was in when I was in America recently, some of my friends were like, "Oh yeah, we're doing Dry January." They're just eating gummies, like loads and loads of gummies. They're like, "Yes, LA Dry January." And they're having a great day, waking up the next day, no hangover, super ready to just like take on the day. Because I can't enjoy that because I think I'm being kidnapped by my own friends.
Yeah.
Keep sending your suggestions to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk and we might read yours out on the next show. Next up, we have Fluff Up of the Week. So next week, Francis is going on a bike packing trip.
Yay.
Oh, you don't seem very excited about it.
I've spent the last 2 days like just packing cardboard boxes.
And what ultimately represents the fluff up of the week, waiting for cardboard boxes as well.
Waiting for cardboard boxes. Yeah, the bike only just turned up. It is different to what I've bike packed on before. So I just needed to set it up and get it all working right. Also, we've been doing a real versus fake cycling products video. So I had to install some of those products onto the bike.
Oh no, are you really? You using some of the fake products?
Maybe.
On a significant trip?
Well, it might be the real ones. I can't tell anymore. They all look so identical. I just grabbed what I could.
I typically don't care about your bike packing trips. I'm looking forward to this one. Because you're going to be doing it on a bike that has a retail price of about £1,000.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
Which is still a lot of money for a bicycle, but it's a bicycle which I am very confident in is going to be strong, fun to ride, comfortable, and not have any weird issues.
Oh, well, that sounds boring.
Well, there still might be issues with the things I've put on it. But yeah, we'll see.
But
I bought some new tires for it because I needed some slicks. Because we're mostly going to be on roads when we do this, and I bought them, and then they arrived, and I had them in my hands, and Nick looked at them and goes, "Oh, those are the ones that come pre-punctured."
So pre-punctured.
Pre-punctured. They're notorious for
puncturing.
Mm.
I think you showed me the ones you were buying, and I was like, "I'm sure Nick hates those."
Yeah, he does hate them. But as we know, I would rather get four punches than ride in the rain.
You got to get that video content somehow, isn't it?
Well, that's true. You know, on a bikepacking trip, it's the same with Justin when I cycled across America. It was a relief when there was a puncher because it's a little stop and it's an excuse to talk about stuff and laugh about things. And like, actually, it breaks up the day a little bit. It's not the worst thing in the world. As long as it's not like a catastrophic tire failure, no, I don't really mind.
So I think this fluff up of the week has actually evolved into potential fluff up of the future.
Yeah.
And it might be that in a number of weeks' time, when we talk about it on a podcast about the trip that you've had, the fluff up of the week might be, remember those tyres we talked about? 500,000 punctures. Mm. Good luck.
Thank you. Yeah. Somewhere where I have never been before.
When will the first video of that drop?
The first video will be about the 15th of March.
Okay.
I think.
So let's head over to your emails because it's time for more listeners takeover. Email from Matt. Just listened to episode 38 with Chris Hall and wanted to reach out and try and gain an understanding on the idea you put forth that DNFs are totally fine. On one level, I completely agree with you that we shouldn't judge ourselves if we start something and don't complete it. Stuff happens that is out of our control, and we shouldn't let those kinds of challenges frame how we feel about what we did do. The stumbling block for me is the issue of comfort zone. One of the reasons people pursue challenges of all kinds is to push themselves out of their comfort zone in order to grow and expand their knowledge of what they are capable of achieving. For most people, and most definitely me, going out of our comfort zone is hard and mentally uncomfortable. If the idea is, I'll do this until I'm no longer enjoying myself, then I fear most of us would stagnate into contentedness pretty quickly.
I think that sounds lovely. I would love to stagnate in contentedness. Sounds like bliss.
I bought my first road bike last March and signed up to do the Maryland Grand Fondo in September. The ride started out dry, but rain quickly set in. Having never ridden in the rain, the descents were less than fun. I was tempted to call it a day due to my lack of experience, but I stuck it out, pushed past my comfort zone, and accomplished a goal I had set. The ride wasn't fun, but I can look back on it with the knowledge that I gained valuable experience that I wouldn't have gotten without pushing myself. How do you reconcile the idea of not judging ourselves harshly for not finishing with the idea that sometimes we need to push ourselves in order to finish something difficult? It is obviously a good point. I guess where I talk about DNFs being fine and something to not worry about comes from having done lots of really, really hard events and training and riding and beating myself up into a level that was unhealthy. And as a result of all of that experience, I know what is healthy and not healthy for me. And what I like to represent, at least in this conversation, is that everything that we receive and everything that we talk about and everything we see, or at least a lot of it, is always about being tough, get through it, be harder. You've got to finish it. Never give it up. Just do it. And I ultimately go, well, what does it matter if you don't? Does it matter if you don't finish that event, if you don't finish that race, if you don't get that extra 20 watts on your FTP? No. That doesn't mean don't do it. That doesn't mean don't have goals and motivations, but it doesn't matter. You don't need to damage yourself and hurt yourself as someone that has done that historically, because you don't, it's not important in the grand scheme of things. But it is good to have motivation. It is good to have goals. And I do still ride hard on occasion, and I still enjoy it, but it's not something that I do all of the time.
Just by signing up to an event shows, you know, it proves to yourself that you have motivation and goals.
Yeah.
I think that's half the battle for it. That's leagues more than most people even consider in terms of the whole human race, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like people signing up to stuff.
Almost the point you're getting at is it's very easy to get caught in negative mindsets and negative relationships around fitness. Although it should be something that brings you a lot of joy, and motivation can be a really good thing and a really positive thing and release endorphins. There is a sliding scale at both ends of, if you're really undermotivated, then you might feel rubbish about yourself. But also if you push yourself so hard, you never feel good enough and you never reach your goals, or you push past what your body is telling you is pain and it creates injury. Mm-hmm. There are extremes at both end which are negative. And I guess he's asking what is the sweet spot, and it's different for everyone, and it's stuff that takes experience, isn't it?
I guess what we have in this room is we all know what we are capable. What we've all had very high functioning athletic performance, so we know what we're capable of. And I guess knowing that is quite, I know what I can do, or I have been able to do previously, which is quite. It means I don't have to care about it anymore, if you know what I mean.
But that won't be appropriate for everyone. Some people want to push themselves harder. Do you know what? This is a really good question or topic that we should ask James Jobber, who's going to be joining us for one of our podcasts soon. Because mm-hmm. He's the other half of Pete and James Coaching. We had Coach Pete on before. And
I always remember the name of their business.
Upshift Fellow.
Upshift Fellow. And James has a particular interest in sports psychology and motivation.
Yes.
So he'll be a really good person to ask about this.
Yeah, I often end up having really in-depth conversations with James when I'm just having a coffee, watching Nick build a bike. And then Nick's like, what is going on? And we're just like talking about Ronnie O'Sullivan's like mentality and becoming one of the greatest sportsmen of all time.
I think a lot of your polarizing opinions, Jimmy, come from you consuming media or advice in this space that is so polarizing in the other way. So I think it's a result of you consuming media that says never give up, don't back down.
You're trying to balance it out as Mr. Demotivator. Just give up. Sit down. Take a nap.
Well, I think this is what some people think that I am like a massive demotivator.
The point is nuanced and the answer is probably somewhere in the middle and also different for everyone. But I think that's where your polarizing opinions come from, is trying to be a counterbalance to toxic positivity. Is that I don't know what it is, whatever
that
it is.
That is a good term for it, yeah. Let's not forget, do whatever you're comfortable with. And remember that suffering is a choice.
In the words of Phil Guyman. Did I say it right that time?
Phil Guyman? What does he say?
Suffering is a choice.
Oh, is that?
Yeah.
But
I usually call him Phil Gaiman, I think.
I guess that's only relevant to like actual sports.
Did you talk about him last week?
No.
He got the long KOM. In Hawaii, which is, I think it's known as one of the hardest climbs in the world.
Yeah.
And it's something like 3 or 4 hours from the sea to the top of this volcano. And he went and got a KOM.
Nice. Suffering was his choice that day.
Yeah, it was a choice.
Yep.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. And keep sending your emails and stories and fun stuff to wildonespodcast@cavemedia.co.uk. We hope you enjoyed the episode and thank you for tuning in once again. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, whatever else it's called, wherever you listen to it. It'd be great and help us grow the podcast. If you're watching, leave us a like and remember to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Thank you and see you next week. Not you.
Not me. Bye.
Bye.
See you in a few weeks.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.